Hi, welcome to the Growth Summary of Crucial Conversations. This book teaches you how to handle difficult conversations at work and home, especially when people have opposing opinions, strong feelings, and the outcome matters. This book gives you the tools and strategies you need to speak honestly yet respectfully so you can communicate your thoughts and needs while maintaining good relationships. So, who are the authors of this book? There are four authors, and they're experts in leadership and communication with impressive backgrounds. Carrie Patterson co-founded Crucial Learning, helping over 300 Fortune 500 companies improve communication skills. Joseph Grenny is a four-time New York Times bestselling author and respected social scientist. Ron McMillan has over 30 years' experience in organizational behavior, consulting for numerous global companies. And Al Switzer is a recognized authority on change management and has co-authored several influential books. So let's begin. If you want to master the art of handling tough conversations, then Crucial Conversations is a must read. This book will show you how to master the critical skills you need to stay calm and confident during those tough talks. You'll learn practical tools and strategies that will help you level up your leadership and communication. So whether you're aiming to improve your communication at work, manage your personal relationships better, or resolve conflicts effectively, this book offers guidance we all need. In the following summary, we'll highlight the key takeaways from each chapter so you can understand the essential strategies and start applying them in your daily interactions. So the first part of this summary is a summary by chapter. So we'll go through every chapter of Crucial Conversations and just say really quickly what the key concepts are in it in about 5 minutes. So it's a quick overview of key concepts and lessons, beginning with chapter one, summary. A crucial conversation, what is that? It's when there are three things: opposing opinions, strong emotions, and high stakes involved. Crucial conversations happen in important areas of our lives, like career decisions, job promotions, relationships, family matters, and community issues. But when conversations matter the most, we often perform the worst because emotional stress triggers our fight or flight response, and that diverts blood to large muscles in our body to help us fight or run away from threats, and diverts blood and energy away from the parts of your brain responsible for higher reasoning. And that's why we need this book to learn some skills to manage this response. Now, these authors claim that skillfully handling risky topics is the key skill they've found in effective leaders, and it's supported by 20 years of their research involving over 100,000 people. Now, chapter 2 summary. The authors began researching why some people are more effective and influential in their lives, and what they found is that successful individuals can address difficult topics by being 100% honest and 100% respectful at the same time. This approach avoids the common mistake they see many people making called the fool's choice, where people think they must choose between either being honest or being respectful. And that results in either hurtful comments or silence. So the key to crucial conversations is creating a safe environment where everyone feels comfortable sharing their thoughts, even if those thoughts may be controversial or different than the majority. Because the more people contribute to that pool of shared meaning that is the conversation, the better and smarter the final collective decision will be. So now let's go on to chapter 3, summary. Key idea here is to start with heart, and that means focusing on your true intentions before starting a conversation. That is crucial. So you should make sure your motives are coming from the right place, and then other people will be much less likely to get defensive because they can feel the place you're starting from. And to do this right, stay focused on what you really want. You see, when emotions begin running high and running hot, we can often forget our main goals and simply try beginning to win the conversation or even punishing the other person for challenging us or making us feel criticized. So to stay focused, you should ask yourself, what do I want for me? What do I want for them? And what do I really want for our relationship here? And that can help us avoid getting tugged into those emotional concerns. Now, you can also avoid that fool's choice by looking for what the authors call the elusive and. So avoid the fool's choice by looking for the elusive and. What does that mean? Well, for every crucial conversation we have, you should get clear on both what you want and what you don't want. That's the crucial and. For example, someone may say, I want to talk to my spouse about this issue. But that's not enough. They should look at what they also don't want. So they may say, I want to also avoid making my spouse feel criticized or guilty. So if you put those two together, you can have a much more effective motive to begin with and a much more successful crucial conversation. Now, chapter 4 summary. Pay attention to both the content and conditions of conversations to spot safety problems early on. So content is what is being said, but conditions are how people are reacting, even in nonverbal ways or tone of voice, even getting quiet or looking upset. You see, when people begin feeling unsafe, then they tend to resort to either silence or violence. So we can spot when a conversation is becoming crucial by recognizing those symptoms, and they can be physical, emotional, or behavioral. We can look at for them in ourselves or in other people. Like maybe you start getting a dry mouth, maybe you feel charged inside, or maybe you can hear yourself beginning to raise your voice. When you spot these kind of signs in yourself or others, it'll alert you that you're beginning to have a crucial conversations and you need to start becoming more aware of your responses. Another thing that can help in this self-awareness is to understand your style under stress. By reflecting on how you've reacted in past difficult conversations, like when you felt put on the spot, or criticized, or received some feedback, notice if you withdrew from the dialogue or if you began attacking the person instead of the issue. Understanding what your style under stress is can help you recognize future crucial conversations quickly. And with people you know well, like family members, you can also probably remember what their style under stress is and keep an eye out for that in the future too. Now we're on to chapter 5 summary. If someone begins feeling unsafe in a conversation, pause and then rebuild safety and only then continue talking. And this chapter is all about how to do that. So people feel safe in a conversation when they feel there is two things, mutual purpose and mutual respect. To create mutual purpose, make sure they know that you care about their needs. For mutual respect, treat others with dignity, even people you feel like you can't respect, because we are in the end all human beings flawed in our unique ways. So here are some ways to rebuild safety if you can spot those signs that other people are under stress. If needed, you can apologize if you did say something wrong. Second way is asking why they want something. So if you have some kind of conflict with someone, you can ask, why do you want this? And then you can maybe find their needs underneath what they're asking for to find a common solution. We'll go into more details about that technique later on. A final way to rebuild safety is by contrasting, and this can help clarify misunderstandings. Contrasting is making a don't/do statement, and that means you begin with clarifying what you don't or didn't mean to say, and then explain what you do mean. So if somebody misunderstands your comment or sees it as bigger than what you meant, this is a great technique. We'll talk more about that later on too. Now chapter 6, summary. Emotions come from the stories we tell ourselves about what we have seen and heard. And so we can control our reactions to what's happening by changing these stories, or at least being aware of them. You can interpret events differently to change your feelings. This is something many people are not aware of. For example, if someone seems to have dominated a meeting at work, and you feel like they did it because they think you're incompetent or unable to speak, then consider a different interpretation or story. Maybe they felt nervous and began over-talking instead of thinking that they find you incompetent. Same facts, different story, equals different feelings about the situation. You should also be questioning your stories to see if you're seeing yourself too much as a victim, blaming others as one-dimensional villains, or feeling helpless even though you do have power in the situation. Look for your role in the problem and consider other possible stories that fit the facts as well, before jumping to a conclusion. Now, Chapter 7 Summary. When discussing sensitive topics, start with the facts of what happened. An example given in this book, if a wife finds a motel receipt and worries her husband is cheating, the best way to begin would be starting with the facts of, I found this receipt for a motel down the road, instead of beginning with the charged accusations, because there could be another story that fits the facts as well. Now, the second part, when discussing sensitive topics, after you've stated the facts, then you share your story, which is really your interpretation of the facts. When doing this, the authors say we should speak tentatively, because this actually makes others more opening to listening and considering your perspective than if we charge ahead and hide any doubts we have about our interpretation. Finally, when sharing sensitive topics, you should ask for the other person's viewpoint and encourage them to share their side. If they hesitate, you can guess what they may be thinking or play devil's advocate to get the conversation started. And that brings us to Chapter 8 Summary. And this is mostly about some strategies for listening better. And these are to ask what's going on with them, to mirror their emotions by stating how they seem to look or act. You can also paraphrase what they said in your own words. And finally, prime by guessing what they may be thinking or feeling. Now, if you want to disagree with someone while maintaining safety, you can use the ABCs. That means begin with points of agreement instead of disagreement, build on their points by saying yes and instead of beginning with no, you're wrong about this or that, and finally compare differences respectfully. And this is all different than starting with saying they're wrong, which can put the other person on the defensive. Chapter 9 Summary. The first part of this chapter is deciding how to decide. Sometimes the decision-making process after an important conversation is straightforward, like when there's a clear line of authority, like a parent or manager that's in charge. But in many other situations, how the final decision is made is actually needs to be part of that discussion process of the shared pool of meaning. So there are four ways to make decisions. Command is following external guidelines, like the boss may be guiding the engineers to follow safety standards. Another way is consulting, seeking advice from an expert, then voting, and that's best when choosing among a few good options. And finally, consensus, and that's for complex decisions needing strong unity, because it's time-consuming to do that all the time. And once a decision is done, we need to make assignments. And that turns the decision into a result. So to make an assignment, you need to specify who does what by when and how follow-up will occur. And that creates accountability and responsibility. Chapter 10 Summary. So this chapter offers some advice on applying these tools we talked about in specific tough scenarios, like dealing with harassment at work, an overly sensitive spouse, or unreliable coworkers. There aren't really new major concepts in this chapter. Now, Chapter 11 Summary. This chapter is a review of the book's key principles, emphasizing the two biggies of learning to look for signs of silence or violence that indicate a crucial conversation has begun, and the second principle of making it safe for everyone to contribute, especially by asking for their input. All right, so that's all the chapters in this book. Now, there's another best-selling book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And in that one, the author Stephen Covey wrote, quote, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood," end quote. Essentially, that means if we want to have influence over other people, we usually must first be open to being influenced by them. And that begins with sincerely trying to see from their point of view. He wrote also, quote, "Most people do not listen with the intent to understand, they listen with the intent to reply." And as you'll see, this is a core principle of crucial conversations too, beginning with listening to understand, instead of beginning with trying to get our way. And you can learn more great conversation and leadership strategies in our summary of that book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People on Growth Summary. So here's a quick quiz question. What is a key practice of people who are skilled at dialogue? Is it A, agree with others, B, avoid conflict, C, change the story, or D, make it safe? And the correct answer is D, make it safe. Now let's move on to a deep dive into the best practical ideas and key takeaways in this book. So our next part of the summary is the lesson number 2, start with right intentions. Begin a crucial conversations being 100% honest and 100% respectful. So what's this all about? If you want to handle crucial conversations effectively, you need to begin with the right intentions or motives in your heart. And this is very important. And we can do this by focusing on what you really want for yourself, for the other person, and your relationship. Avoid that fool's choice of thinking you can be either honest with the person or respectful of them. Instead, strive for both, because that's what effective communicators do. So when you're in a difficult conversation, this may sound corny, but it is essential to start with the right intentions in your heart and keep focused on the right thing. And that means checking your motives before you begin speaking. You see, when emotions run hot inside of us, we can easily lose sight of our true goals for ourselves, for the other person, and the relationship. And we get caught up in trying to simply win the argument, or worse, punish the other person. And partly, this is because of the way evolution has wired our brains. When we are stressed, blood is diverted away from our brain's complex thinking areas towards our large muscles and other parts related to survival. And partly, this reaction has to do with our culture's strong emphasis on winning, no matter what. So to stay focused, ask yourself, what do I want for me? What do I really want for them? What do I really want for our relationship? Consider the example of Kevin, one of several vice presidents in a company. You see, the CEO of that company tended to get angry when challenged by others. So when he proposed a bad idea for a new office location, everyone else kept quiet. However, Kevin approached the situation very differently. He politely and calmly explained how the CEO was violating his own past rules. You see, while other employees thought they could either be honest with the CEO or they could respect him by keeping silent, Kevin avoided that fool's choice. He asked himself how he could be both 100% honest and 100% respectful at the same time, leading to a productive outcome for everyone. And Kevin is one of the people this whole book strategies are modeled upon. So to avoid that fool's choice, we should look for the elusive and. That means asking yourself how you can achieve both what you want and avoid what you don't want in the conversation. For example, I want to talk about this sensitive issue with my spouse so we can find a solution for everyone to feel happy with. And I want to avoid making them feel criticized while we're talking. By adding that and that second part of the statement of what you don't want, you're putting the right motive in your heart to handle the conversation better. So here's another quiz question. What is the key to effective communication? Is it A, being completely honest, B, being absolutely polite, C, avoiding uncomfortable topics, or D, being 100% honest and 100% polite? Correct answer is D, being both 100% honest and polite. Now we have lesson 3, make sharing safe. This is about some tools for maintaining safety and encouraging everyone to contribute to that pool of shared meaning that is the conversation. So what's this all about? To ensure everyone feels safe to share their ideas, we need to be watching out for signs of silence or violence, and then we work to rebuild safety when we see those signs using tools like contrasting and mutual purpose. And that helps increase the group's collective intelligence by ensuring all voices are heard. And in the end, everybody makes a better decision and people respect your leadership in getting there. So let's dive deeper into this. In any crucial conversation, the real goal is to ensure that everyone feels safe enough to contribute their thoughts and ideas. This helps us create a pool of shared meaning because the group's collective intelligence is increased by having diverse perspectives and even contradictions included. To achieve this, it's important to recognize and address signs that someone feels unsafe to contribute. So when people don't feel safe, they will generally resort to either silence or violence. Silence can manifest as avoiding topics, understanding one's true opinions, or even walking away from the conversation. Violence, on the other hand, is generally not physical violence in a modern society, but it would include dominating the conversation, maybe belittling other people, or using hurtful comments. These reactions are often indicators the person feels attacked or disrespected, unsafe in a different way. So now let's talk about some tools, 3 ways we can rebuild safety. First, apologize if you've caused pain or difficulty. A sincere apology shows that you're willing to admit mistakes and to focus on the greater goal. The second way is by using contrasting. This is an amazing tool to clear up misunderstandings. So it's much different than apologizing. It's a don't do statement where you first say what you don't mean or what you didn't mean to say, and then you add what you do mean. For instance, if you mention somebody doing something the wrong way and they appear to be offended or upset about it, you could use this kind of statement, don't do statement, by saying, I don't mean to criticize you, I do want to help us find a solution. And so that can help clarify your intent. And the third way to rebuild safety is by finding mutual purpose. So this is about making sure the other person understands that you care about their needs and wants, not just your own, that you're on the same team. For example, instead of criticizing a boss for being unreliable, you could begin the conversation by discussing how you can help them achieve their valued goal of meeting deadlines faster, and then use that as a bridge to the topic of the problem of them being unreliable. Another way to find mutual purpose is by asking the person why they want something, to see if you can determine their real needs and find if there's another way to fill both of your needs with a mutual solution. For example, if one person wants a quiet night in while the other person wants to go out to a noisy place, it appears to be a conflict, but by asking why, the other person might reveal that they want to go out to get away from the kids, and that can lead to a compromise of going out, but not to a noisy place, but to a quiet place, and then everyone is satisfied. Now, I'm going to connect this to another book. This last idea is very similar to a core concept in the powerful negotiation book called Getting to Yes, written by Harvard business expert. That book says to focus on interests, not positions that other people have. So it emphasizes looking underneath what people's stated positions in a negotiation are to find their real underlying interests, what they really want. For example, imagine 2 coworkers arguing about the best way to complete a project. One insists on using a specific software while the other prefers a different tool. Instead of getting stuck deeper in their conflicting positions, they decide to explore their underlying needs. So they ask why, and they find out one wants speed and the other wants accuracy. And so by understanding why, they agree to use the fast software first and the accurate tool later for final checks, meeting both workers' needs effectively. So you can learn more great negotiation tips in our summary of getting to yes. Now here's another quiz question. What is it called when you make a statement that first clarifies what you don't mean, then says what you do mean? Is it A, a contrasting statement, B, a conditional statement, C, a meaning statement, or D, a mutual purpose statement? Correct answer is A, a contrasting statement. That brings us to the big lesson number 4, stories cause feelings. This is about taking control of our emotional reactions by shaping the stories we tell ourselves. So what's this all about? To manage your emotional reactions in a crucial conversations, you must understand that your feelings are shaped not just by facts of what happened, but also the stories we tell ourselves about what we have seen and heard. So we should be avoiding some of these clever stories that cast us as an easy victim, others as black and white villains, or tell us that we're helpless to do anything. We can take control by remaining open to multiple interpretations of the facts. When it comes to handling our emotions in a crucial conversation, it's very important to recognize that others don't make us feel anything. Rather, we create our own emotions through the stories we tell ourselves. And the authors of this book recognize that this may be a controversial view to hold. But let's explore this further. You see, most people think emotions follow the sequence of seeing something, then feeling something about it, and then acting. But the true process, according to these authors, they say includes a critical intermediate step. You see, first we see something, then we tell a story about it, and then we feel something about it, and then we act. So the authors of Crucial Conversations call this the path to action. And what it means is our feelings are directly influenced not only from the facts that we have observed, but even more strongly by the stories we interpret from those facts. For example, let's say a coworker dominates a work presentation, and you might tell yourself a story that they think you're incompetent, unable to speak well, and that can lead to feelings of anger against them or perhaps inadequacy about ourselves. However, another interpretation of that same fact could be that they felt nervous and were over-talking. So you see, both stories are based on the same facts that they dominated the presentation, but they can lead to very different emotions and actions. To take control, we can retrace our path to action by asking ourselves what story we are telling when we feel emotional upset or anger or sadness. Observe your actions first, which may be silence or violence. Then notice which feelings led to that behavior, and finally identify the story behind them. Challenge that story by considering other possible interpretations of the facts. The authors point out that there are 3 clever stories, traps that we tend to fall into, because they can justify our behavior and relieve us of responsibility. First, there are victim stories which tell us it's not my fault. To escape this, you can ask yourself, am I ignoring my role in sustaining this problem? Second are villain stories which say it's all their fault. Can ask yourself, why would a reasonable person act the way they are acting? Third story is helpless stories which say, I couldn't have done anything else. To escape this one, we can ask ourselves, if I really wanted to achieve this goal that I claim to want, what would I do? So, for example, instead of pouting or feeling quietly upset about what happened, perhaps we would reach out to sit down and discuss the situation with the other person. So the problem with all of those clever stories is not that they're completely wrong, but that they are incomplete. They're almost always only part of the story. So by questioning our clever stories and telling a more complete and accurate story, we can better manage our emotions and reactions, and we can also then be more proactive in our behavior, leading to healthier and more productive relationships. So here's another quiz question. What is the true sequence of that path to action? Is it A, see, then feel, then act? B, see, then act, then feel? Or is it C, which is see, then tell story, then feel, then act? Or is it D, see, then feel, then tell story, then act? So the correct sequence here is C, which begins with seeing, then telling a story, and then feeling and acting. So next we have lesson 5, focus on the facts. Share the facts first, then tell your story tentatively, and then ask their view. So this is about how to share sensitive topics in a crucial conversation. We should start by sharing the uncontroversial facts of what happened, then tell your story tentatively, and then invite others to share their perspectives. By using this approach, it encourages open dialogue and reduces defensiveness so we can reach a better outcome for everyone. So let's dive a little deeper into exactly how to do those steps. When we're trying to persuade someone, it is crucial to start with the facts, because the facts are much less likely to be disputed and provide a solid foundation for the conversation. Most people, on the other hand, will probably start with the story, which can often provoke defensiveness and counterattacks. Let's talk about an example here. Imagine a manager noticing an employee frequently arriving late for work. Instead of beginning with accusing the employee of being lazy or disrespectful by saying something like, "You're always late because you don't care about your job," the manager can begin with the facts, which is, I've noticed that you've been arriving after 9 a.m. several times this month. That is a fact, an observation. The next part is to share your interpretation of that fact by telling your story about it, but do so tentatively. So this means expressing your concerns or what conclusions you appear to be coming to without seeming to be overly certain or dogmatic. So this is kind of counterintuitive. We want to appear a little uncertain of ourselves, and that makes the other person less defensive. It makes them more willing to express themselves toward us and give us what their interpretation may be. So in that, going back to that example, the manager might then say, "I'm concerned because when you arrive late, it impacts our team's productivity and morale." By presenting this interpretation as a concern rather than an accusation, the employee is more likely to be open to the discussion of how their arriving late impacts their performance and other people. The final part of this is asking for the other person's perspective. This is about showing that you're genuinely interested in hearing their side of the story. Encourage them to share their thoughts by asking open-ended questions like, "Can you help me understand why this is happening? Or is there something going on that's affecting your arrival time?" This not only opens up the dialogue, but also shows respect for their viewpoint. So here's another quiz question. Since the best way to start a tough talk is by focusing on the facts, not interpretations, which of the following statements would be best to use? Is it A, "You're always late"? B, "I noticed you arrived late"? C, "You don't respect the schedule"? Or D, "You must be lazy"? Correct answer here is B, "I noticed you arrived late," because it focuses on the facts. And that brings us to the final lesson in this book, which is number 6, Show Empathy. This is about practicing active listening techniques like mirroring, paraphrasing, and priming, and some more. So, to understand the other person's perspective, which is critical in one of these conversations, we can use listening tools like asking questions, mirroring by describing their emotions, paraphrasing what they said, and priming by guessing what they may be thinking. Finally, we can build on points of agreement and respectfully show how we differ instead of starting with points of disagreement. So let's dive deeper into what all that means. When we're engaging in a crucial conversations, effective listening is vital to understanding and resolving the conversation. So here are five key tools for active listening. First, ask. Begin by asking open-ended questions to understand the other person's perspective. A simple "what's going on" invites them to share their thoughts and feelings without feeling pressured or judged. Second tool is to mirror. That means reflecting the other person's emotions and actions to show empathy and understanding, especially if their words and actions don't align. For example, if someone claims to be fine but they look upset, you might say, "You seem to be upset," and that encourages them to open up about their true feelings. Third tool is to paraphrase. That's about summarizing what the other person has said in your own words, and that demonstrates that you're actively listening and ensures that you've accurately understood their point of view, because if you got something wrong, they will probably clarify it for you. Here's an example. So you're saying that you feel overwhelmed by the workload. Fourth tool is to prime. When someone seems hesitant to share, we can take a guess at what they may be thinking or feeling. And this can help them to open up a little more and to articulate their thoughts to us. For instance, are you feeling stressed because of the upcoming deadline? Okay, and the fifth tool is the ABCs. That stands for agree, build, and compare. This is all about starting with points of agreement to create a positive foundation. Instead of outright disagreement, build on their points by adding your perspective to them. For example, if somebody says something and you don't really agree with it, instead of beginning with saying, "You're wrong, I think this," you can say, "Yes, I see your point, and I think we can also consider this." And instead of focusing on those points of disagreement, begin with what you have in common, and then compare the differences respectfully by saying, "Here's where I think we differ." Now, I'm going to connect this to another great book on negotiation, which is called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, a former FBI lead kidnapping negotiator. He says one of the most powerful negotiation strategies is tactical empathy. And to accomplish that, he uses a tool called labeling, which is similar to mirroring in this book. For example, in one tense situation, Chris Voss was talking to three dangerous fugitives who refused to come out of an apartment building. So for 6 hours, Chris and his FBI colleagues used that technique of labeling. They said things like, "It seems like you're scared of going back to jail," and "It looks like you're scared we'll start shooting if you open the door," etc., etc. So by labeling what those three fugitives may be feeling and thinking, it demonstrated empathy, and that helped to calm them down until they eventually surrendered peacefully. Chris Voss wrote this in his book. "Research shows the best way to deal with negativity is to observe it without reaction and without judgment, then consciously label each negative feeling and replace it with a positive, compassionate, and solution-based thought." End quote. So you can learn a lot more about his approach to negotiation in our summary of Never Split the Difference on Growth Summary. Now here's a final quiz question. What does priming involve in a conversation? Is it A, guessing their feelings, B, giving advice, C, making accusations, or D, asking directly? And the correct answer is A, guessing their feelings is priming. So let's finish up here with several action steps on how we could apply this book to our lives starting today. First action step is to check our motives. Before a difficult conversation, you can think about or even write down what you want for yourself, for the other person, and the relationship, and that can help you remain focused on getting to a positive outcome. Second action step is to create safety. Watch for those signs of discomfort or defensiveness, and when you see them, take a step back to make it safe for the other person to speak. Third, clarify your intent. Use contrasting statements by saying what you don't mean, followed by what you do mean, to clarify any misunderstandings. 4, start with facts. Begin crucial conversations and sensitive topics by stating observable facts before sharing your interpretations or feelings tentatively. 5, use tentative language. Practice using phrases like "I'm beginning to think" or "it seems to me" to share your story without sounding dogmatic or overly certain, which provokes defensiveness. 6, mirror and paraphrase. During conversations, reflect the other person's emotions and summarize their points in your own words to show empathy and understanding. All right, so that's all, and I hope you enjoyed this summary of crucial conversations.